Doug Gottlieb, and this is All Ball. Thank you so much, for downloading, subscribing, rating, and write a review. I think if you write a review, I make more money. Maybe not. Maybe it's just testing your ability to write in the comment section. And if it's a positive review, even better. You're going to love this podcast. I catch up with a guy who I know and consider a friend, but there's a lot I didn't know because he was kind of late on the AAU scene. Kind of an amazing story of how I had no idea how many high schools he went to. Tremaine Foakes ended up making the NBA. He was a second round draft pick, next to the last pick of the second round with the Denver Nuggets. This after he played at Cal for 2 years and then played at Fresno State for 2 years. So he played for Todd Bozeman and then ultimately for Jerry Tarkanian at Fresno State. It's a two-parter. The second part, we'll get into the Malice at the Palace and some of the other late NBA stuff. And you know, he's got a book. He's got a book out as well. But I want to dig in with him. In regards to, we talked some transfer portal stuff, and I had some really good, interesting feedback, you know, on from parents of an AAU basketball in regards to what I said last time was transfer portal. We don't pay attention to some of the players that are still there, right? Do you value the guys who are loyal to you, or do you only value the next best thing? And it's a hard one as a coach, right? Because you do know you want more and you want to be more successful. And on the other hand, you do want to see yourself as loyal. And if you really think of yourself as a good coach, the guys who have been with you, you've been able to help them be better. So I do understand the, hey, look, it's a profession and coaches have to get better players. And if there's a better player that fits your program and your culture, then by all means. And sometimes guys are around for extra years for a reason. That said, it's a hard push and pull, as I think you guys can relate. But it's going to be a fascinating year, right? Going to be a fascinating year. Like, what's the fine print on transferring? Because, you know, the next level is, all right, all these guys transferred, play right away. Many of them are going to be unhappy another time. And they'll be like, oh, wait, this was only a one-time transfer thing. The two-time transfers are the ones that are going to be majorly impacted. Majorly impacted. And then, of course, we have the high school recruits. So now they're dealing with, like, I was going somewhere and I thought I was going somewhere. And now they took a couple guys in the transfer portal, knowing it's really hard to win with young guys in college basketball with all these transfers. The whole thing is fascinating. All right. Well, I'll give you some more of my thoughts on what looks like to, you know, what it's a pretty easy tracking of assistant coach goes to a place and lands a player. Davion Harmon, for example, was recruited by Chris Crutchfield to go to Oklahoma. Crutch had left and gone to Arkansas. And then he was a head coach, in Oklahoma at a D2 school earlier this year. Now he left that D2 school and he's assistant in Oregon. Davion Harmon's now at Oregon, right? Like, there's some easy tracking guys where there's a familiar face, but it's going to be a hard tracking service to get all of these transfers when everybody gets settled. Without further ado, let's get to my good friend. It's Tremaine Foakes, of course, started Crenshaw High School and won a state championship. Then went to Cal, then went to Fresno State, then ultimately made it to the NBA. Here's his tale.
All right, let's welcome in Tremaine Foakes joins us. He's, okay, so I first met you. We go to ABCD camp. You were going to be a junior. You were going to be a senior. I was going to be a junior. And I had seen you beat Mater Dei in the Southern Texan Championships, you and Kriston. Yeah. And it was awesome, okay? But you were a late bloomer. You were kind of at least in the – it wasn't really the circuit back then, but
– right.
Like, You were kind of okay. So where'd you first start playing hoop?
Well, it started at Westchester. You know, you had Westchester during my time when I was a freshman. They were really good. You know,
Ed, I mean, before that though, when you first started hooping.
First started, you know, basketball was my second sport. I was originally a football player, and that came from my dad playing professional football. You know, I had the athletic genes, but I had more of a football vibe in me. And that translated to me playing, you know, running back and wide receiver, all prime positions, until I really got hurt because I was growing. you know, and somebody tackled me in my shin. I said, you know what? It's time to play some basketball. So I said, let's.
Well, there is some, like, people always say, like, well, LeBron James, you know, would he be a good football? He wouldn't be a good football player. He'd be a great football player.
Right.
And they're like, yeah, but would he go over the middle? Like, nobody likes going to the middle. Like, nobody likes. No, there isn't a wide receiver or running back in the NFL that goes like, you know what I really like? I like being ear-holed. I really do. Right. Okay, so you start playing football. What was the organization? Because I played football from when I was 7, all right, up until high school. Mm-hmm. And we played, Orange Junior All-American, right?
Yeah.
What was your organization you played football for growing up?
The Inglewood Jets. They're the Inglewood Jets now, but back then they had Inglewood with names, you know, Redskins, Command, right. Warrior, Sentinel. So once they changed that, it's still now today the Inglewood Jets. So all the teams are the Inglewood Jets, and that was my Pop Warner team league for about six, seven years, man. And then once we come, it's a classic though, man. I wish I could have some tape. People are looking at me, and I was not as tall, but a little bit more thicker. Run, those tapes have disappeared. We're looking for those game tapes right now for the documentary. It would go so perfect.
It would go perfect. What was your dad's influence on you like?
You know, my dad was straight up and down guy. He didn't no nonsense. He definitely installed a good work ethic in me, you know, to set goals and, you know, go out there and leave it on the floor, on the court, on the field. That was his perspective, you know, not only in sports, but, you know, in life. Give it all you have while you got it.
And so where did you grow up in Westchester? Did you grow up in Inglewood?
You know, I grew up in Inglewood. You know, that's where everything started. I was on the outskirts of Inglewood with the, you know, if you never heard of Ladera Heights, you know.
Oh, yeah, I never heard of Ladera Heights. Well, because I'm white? No, stop with that bullshit, okay? First of all, the king of Ladera Heights, okay? The king of Ladera Heights is George Raveling. George Raveling was the head coach of USC. And the greatest, and this is only Hoopers in L.A. know this, if you could ever get to go to George Raveling's basement, you go in there and he had all the Nike gear, like everything. It was, so Black Beverly Hills was Ladera Heights, right? Like that was the spot. Anybody who was anybody in LA at the time in the '80s and nineties that had a good family, wasn't like crazy rich, like Beverly Hills or whatever, but it was awesome. Okay. So you were in Ladera Heights.
I was blessed to be in Ladera Heights, man. Had a pool in the back, man. Got to make sure I didn't get too injured, you know, too injured. I'd be able to just do my little rehab in the pool. But, you know, yeah, coming from Ladera, I was able to walk to Inglewood, you know, the infamous Rogers Park, you know, getting my game from a lot of greats there. Jason Works, Harold Miner, you know, the list goes on and on, man. Jay Humphreys was even, you know, from Inglewood. He's old school, you know, so it's a lot of history that comes out of Inglewood. And I was, you know, right there next door.
I'm still offended. You said, I don't know. You don't know.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, you know, look.
Shit. Come on, man.
I owe you much.
Fair enough. I will gladly accept. Okay. So, but did you play with a travel ball squad? Right. Cause we had, so you're the age, like, I was in that grade, and then I stayed back in eighth, and that was Ricky Price and Toby Bailey and Chris Don, whatever, Cameron Murray. Like, that was all of our grade. What were you doing when we were in sixth, seventh, eighth grade? We were all hooping at Victoria Park with Slam and Jam. Washington. What were you doing?
Right. Yeah. That, now, you know, I was in and out of the, you know, everybody in LA had to go through Victoria Park, Slam and Jam. But when it really started from the beginning, you know, it started with more of the inner city ball clubs like B-Ball, Hawthorne Cougars, Harold Jones. You know, shout out to Harold Jones, who is now the coach at Hawthorne High School. He got the job at his alma mater, but he had a traveling team, you know, at Hawthorne Cougars, that we're able to at least travel a little bit. And everybody had to do the Vegas trip. You know, if you didn't do the Vegas trip, you felt left out. So my ball started in, you know, Rogers Park, and kind of fluctuated out to Hawthorne, a ball club named E-Ball. E-Ball was Sam's ball club.
Sam Miner, right?
Yeah, Sam, exactly.
Okay, so here's, again, I don't know. Okay, so when I, this is a true story that has not been told before, okay? So I was, my dad had his, our teams, whatever, growing up, and we had, by that time, we had Miles Simon, and we had J.R. Henderson, and we were like in eighth grade, and when they went to high school, I stayed back. And okay. We didn't really have a team. And so I got to practice with Jason Hart's squad, right? He was on that team with Shea Cotton. Those were the younger kids. Right. I needed a squad to play on. So my dad reached out to Mr. Miner, to Sam Miner. Okay. Wow. And twice a week I would go, and my dad picked me up at school and dropped me at Sam Miner's house. And I'd have dinner and do my homework with his family. And then we'd go, and I think we had practice once, and then we'd hoop. I think the league was, there was like a city league at, I think it was at Westchester High School. And it was dope, right? I was the only white kid in the league.
His true family, story?
He was incredible to me, And it was great. And it was a year where I grew from being, I'm still a midget, from being like 5 foot, right, to being 5'9", 5'10". So I wasn't very good because I was growing so much. But so yeah, B-ball was a good city squad, right? So right, okay, yeah. So why did you choose to go? So did you go to Westchester High School first, and then to Crenshaw? How did the high school thing come to be?
You know, my mom didn't want me too close to Englewood High School. You know, Englewood, where, you know, she thought the influence, you know, would, you know, trickle down on me, which it wouldn't have. I'm a strong guy. You know, I could have done it, but
yeah. Anyway. But was it? Javon Hester, was that the cat's name? What was the dude's name who was their best player?
It was, you're right. It was Javon Harris, Javon Hester. Javon
Hester. Yeah. And then there was a little point guard too, who was really good.
Then Jason Crow. I know Jason Hart was there.
Jason Crow was boys with. So Paul Pierce was a sophomore, and we played him in high school my sophomore year. This is, again, before you and I met.
Right.
And I didn't know who Paul was, because Paul was like, he wasn't a dude.
He was
yet.
Just on his way up. Right.
So they beat us at our gym in the second round of the CIA playoffs, right? Here's some funny shit, right? That was when Nothing But a G Thing just came out. Now, it just came out in Orange County, which means it was out in LA like 6 months before.
Right. Y'all got a little late.
So we start like warming up. And somebody put in like Nothing But a G Thing, like the clean version, right? And we're getting down, and guys are laying up and dunking. We're playing Englewood. And
right.
All of a sudden, now the cheerleaders, they know every, for Englewood, they know every word. And we look down the other end of the court, and Javon Hester's leaning in and dunking, and Paul Pierce is doing double clutch. And they freaking housed us in our place. And Paul was a little thick. He was a little fat, right? And he dunked on our big guy. But what happened was, and this is to your mom's credit, her knowledge, 2 weeks after they played us, I think Javon got caught with like an AK-47 in the back of his car. So he got kicked out of high school, and they lost in the playoffs. Right. So like your mom knew, like, Paul wasn't a bad dude, but there were some dudes that were doing some different shit. So she says, all right, you're going to Etizam,
right?
Playing for Westchester. You're a freshman year in high school. How big are you?
Yeah, I am. I come in about six. Freshman about 6'3", you know, 6'3", maybe 175. Where, you know, I'm still a skinny kid. My knees are hurting. I have Osgood Slaughter's.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to put it together, man. And I'm like, okay, well, let me come in and play some football, because that's what I know. It starts early, you know, and I can go ahead and try to get my feet wet in high school a little early. And, you know, it went well. It went well until the last couple of games. I got an interception. I caught the ball. I'm running to the end zone. I'm almost there. And this guy comes right at my shin, puts his helmet in my shin, man. I said, you know what? I scored a touchdown. But after that, I had a orange size a lump on my shin. I said, you know what? It's time to retire, and let's go. Well, we're going to change this up a little bit. And from then on, I just said, this is basketball on out. Knowing Westchester has some good history. You know, they had James Gray, at Lee Boyd. They had the Ball Brothers. And I said, you know, I'm having to start myself small with JV. And at the time, I might have gone that summer of playing football, going into basketball, so I might have gained a half for it. And all that was for my advantage for basketball. So I saw that as a blessing. And when that came about, Coach DeWitt, I want to give props to Coach DeWitt, Coach Brown, because they gave me a chance to work myself up from fifth string. If you didn't, you know.
Wait, hold on. So you're at Westchester, you're a freshman, you're playing JV, you're fifth string in JV?
Yeah, you know, you come on late, so you're not on the first.
Oh, yeah, because you're football. It's football.
Right. You know, let's say fourth string, but I'm just saying that the raising, having to come up, you know, and work my way up to first string was really hard. You know, you had juniors and you had sophomores on JV. You know, being a freshman coming late from football was already hard enough, but them giving me that chance because I was a hard worker. So, you know, I raised the intensity of practice, the level, you know, the competition. Raised that, you know, it was intense, and they saw that kind of trickled down on all the other players. And next thing you saw was, hey, other players are playing better with me in the game. I don't have to be that deadly shooter, you know, but if I'm active on the court and I'm playing tight D, I'm helping you stand out, I'm taking charges, and I'm getting where we need to go, getting us where we need to go, I'm different on the court. That's what happened. Went 4 or 5. Next thing you know, we're on a winning streak. I saw myself as a fixture in that lineup, and we ended the season well, and that boosted my confidence and let me know that, hey, maybe you need to take basketball a little bit more seriously.
So then did you – okay, so after your freshman year, were you still with B-ball, or did you switch to a bigger club? How'd that work?
You know, sparingly, you know, it was – back then, it was hard unless the coach was actually picking you up. Your mom was just going to take you to one thing. You either picking the practice here at school or you picking the practice with them. So if you were good enough, you were able to have coach pick you up. And I was fortunate enough that coach would pick me up, Sam would pick me up, Harold would pick me up. And, you know, for those, that was big. So I was able to still intertwine both, you know, the traffic as well as
Here's the other side to it, okay? So my dad was the coach, right? So most of my childhood experience in the afternoon was riding in that car to go pick dudes up, right? We'd have to go halfway to San Diego to pick up Adam Walton. We'd have to go halfway up to, even when we were in eighth grade, we had a couple dudes, a guy named Jasmine Johnson, we called Bump because he had a big bump in the back of his head. We had to go pick up Bump, and he lived by the Jordan, L.A. Jordan Projects, right?
There's Jordan House. Yeah.
So there's, help me out here. Okay. Man. Now this part I don't know as much about. Okay. Jordan High School's in the middle and there's projects on each side, right?
Right.
Isn't it? Right. Yeah. And, but yeah. one project was Crips and one project was Bloods.
Yeah.
and the high school's in the middle, like
in the middle,
right? And I never forget this. This is a true. So, think about how white this car is. My mom had an Astro van that we would take the back seats out of.
Yeah. Right?
So my dad would drive this Astro van, and we go pick up these two cats in L.A. that live right by the projects, and he gets a flat tire. Right outside LA Jordan High School. We had, at the time, my dad had some hookup with Nike. So we had these, they're in hindsight terrible, but they were Nike sweats and they were blue and green and white. And we all have them on after practice.
Right.
And now we're outside the car and these dudes are, you know, they're like, you know, this is the toughest part of LA. You know, don't be wearing blue in this area. Like,
right.
And so we're out of the car. We're trying to change this tire. And we got Adam Walton, big, giant, white dude right from San Diego. Miles Simon, who I love Miles, but he grew up in a wider area than I did, right? And me and my pops. And every time a car rolls up, like, slow, like, even to ask, like, hey, man, you need some help? We're, like, hopping in the bushes and hiding.
Right. You don't know what help they're going to give you, right?
Correct. So my childhood was the opposite. Where my childhood was, we were going to pick these dudes up. So I was seeing, I know every part of LA from that. And, you know, like I do sports radio now. I was listening to it with my dad, right? And like that was kind of like my childhood experience.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
All right, so your sophomore year, when did you leave and decide to go to Crenshaw?
Well, good question. And that's in my book, too. You know, Westchester had won the city championship, you know, and I saw them. They were a tough team. And as much as the JVs, shout out to my JV Westchester squad, because some days we did beat the varsity squad. We beat you guys. But, you know, they were a tough squad. They deserved everything they got there. And they returned all their starters back, except Leroy O'Brien. So Leroy O'Brien was a city player of the year.
Leroy who?
Leroy O'Brien. He was.
What the hell happened to him? He was city player. Right. What happened?
Right. See, I don't know where Leroy is. He's disappeared. He was the big man. You remember? See, you got some history in the city, Doug. You know, and you got James Gray, of course, Gumby, who was the point guard, who was the LA City Player of the Year, which is my guy, you know, the following year after I left, which I went to Culver City. I went to Culver City with Chris Ellison.
I know Dominique Ellison. I don't know Chris Ellison.
Well, Chris Ellison right now, he's a football agent. You know, he played Dominique Ellison, they're cousins. There you go.
Okay. Dom was a bad boy now.
Dom was great. Dom was a good player.
I could not guard Dominique Ellison. He was a bucket.
He was hard. Dom was a smart player.
So wait, you go to Culver. I don't even know. I never even heard Culver City High School. How do you go to Culver City High School from like Westchester was like basketball factory. You want to be a hooper. And you're well, I can't start there. So now I'm going to go to, how'd you go to Culver City?
That's what I thought too. I'm like, you know, how am I going to get here and actually be noticed, you know? And it was the Culver City Centaurs. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to be a Centaur. So that was, but you know, me making that transition, it wasn't that far from home. My mom liked the diversity around, you know, in Culver City. She thought that it would have a good positive influence on me, which, you know, any
like school. Like was Westchester, is Westchester a mostly white school except for basketball?
No, Westchester was pretty diverse too, but you had a lot of kids bus in too as well, you know, and that kind of changed, you know, the dynamic
yeah
of the school. So
okay, so you go to West, you go to Culver City,
go to sophomore. Culver City.
Who's the coach, do you know?
Marty Siegel, who was there for
my people.
How you doing, Marty? Shout out to you. So you got Marty Siegel, you got a big man named Shiny Kennedy, who was pretty good, you know. He might be Leroy O'Brien. And you had yourself, and you had a couple other guys, you know, were good feeling players, you know, Louis Beatty, Chris Ellison. And my thing, Doug, was trying to get some confidence at the varsity level.
You want to play?
Yeah, exactly. I wanted to be the man early, and not saying just the man, but just wanted to develop that confidence where I was able to say, hey, if I feel like I could take the time, I will, and the coach won't say, hey, right, pass the ball or, you know, swing the ball, and he would just rely on that I would be able to make the play, you know, just bring some intensity. And, you know, that's what we did.
So no football. No football at all. You didn't go to
football. Football's out of there. We threw football out. We said we are concentrating on strictly basketball.
What Pop say when you're like, I ain't playing football?
Oh, you know what? He said, hey, man, you know, Pops wasn't really a guy that put pressure on you after he saw that I was growing. By that time, about 6'5", I'm taller than my dad now. You know, see, I had a growth spurt. I grew a couple inches. Now I'm 6'5", and I'm coming in myself, you know. And that was that year was perfect. I got to know myself, got to know what I need to work on, what are my strengths, and that set a tone right here. Okay, be an effective player, work your way up because guys were already ranked. You already know that Toby was probably the best player ranked. He was ranked since 7th, 8th. Lonnie, Ricky, you know, these guys have been. Oh, since 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. So my thing was to try to get to that level where they were. You know, I'm getting hoop scoop, and I'm like, gosh, oh my God, I need hoop scoop.
Cal, yeah, you were in Cal High with that Cal High magazine, and they had all the rankings. And
Yeah, Street and Smith, you know.
Yes.
Get in those magazines, you know, and that's what it, you know, somewhat for me was the energy. And, you know, I said, I'm going to have to put this effort in to get.
Okay, so then that summer, okay, so after sophomore year, still with B-ball, or did you switch squads?
Right about then, you know, it was tough. I was kind of you would jump on anybody's squad, you know, whenever you could. So, you know, I would be playing.
For people who don't know, okay, so this league, okay, it started at Victoria Park. There's a guy named Izzy Washington, rest in peace to Izzy, and Reebok Slam and Jam.
Yeah.
And everybody at that time got the Slam and Jam uniforms. You just had a different color jersey, right? White on one side, and then didn't matter what squad it was. And then some teams, like the teams from ARC from the Valley, they would have their own for Vegas and Santa Barbara and other tournaments, right? But you'd wear a Slam and Jam. And so sometimes you'd come in the morning and you'd play, and dudes would be wearing a black Slam and Jam jersey. And then you come in the afternoon, the same guy would be wearing an orange Slam and Jam jersey. Like, what the fuck? Right. Like you just wanted to hoop.
Yeah.
And at some point in time, when we were in high school, it switched from Victoria Park to Dominguez High School, right? Oh, it became all about, everything was at Dominguez. Okay, so you're bouncing around, and then you decide to go to Crenshaw High School. And at the time, Kriston Johnson, KJ, was with us, right? Mm. But you guys both, how did it come to be that you guys came together at Crenshaw?
You know, that's just so weird. You know, I think, you know, it's still amazing to this day that I got to Crenshaw. Me coming from Culver City, you know, this is my third high school. You know, we didn't discuss the fact between Culver City and Crenshaw. I went to Dorsey for a couple of days.
They know that.
Yeah, you know, my, you know, B-ball.
Who was the little point guard at Dorsey?
Kenya Wilkins.
He was a bad. Okay, so Kenya Wilkins. Okay.
He was bad.
He's a bad motherfucker. Okay, so I visited when I left, and we're jumping out of order. We'll get back to it in a second. So I left, when I left Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. I visited a couple places, and I'm like, I'm gonna sit out of junior college and not play. And I went on five visits, and my last visit was actually Oregon, and that was the year that Arizona won the national championship.
Yeah,
well, I visited when Oregon beat Arizona, and Wilkins was their point guard, and I had forgotten how much of a badass he was, and he was a senior, and I was gonna replace him. And he was a bad boy, scoring point, little, tougher than shit. And Dorsey has that cool gym that it's in TV commercials because it's like all glass at one end, right? And it's a really kind of picturesque gym. But how did you – okay, so you're at Culver City. How did you go to Dorsey, and why did you leave and go to Crenshaw?
You know, the competition level wasn't where I wanted it to be, Doug. So, you know, I said, look, I think I peaked out somewhat. And – my cousin Flicky, who was a fixture in Wood, and you know, mentoring a lot of kids, he said, "Trey, please make this decision and go to Crenshaw. You guys will win the city and state championship." I'm like, Flicky, that's just too much, right? You know, everybody's gone from Crenshaw. Yeah, they, you know, they're rebuilding. How do you know this? And man, they got Chris Johnson, Marcus Johnson is going there. I said, that sounds nice, but you know. We got to relay this to my mom. We're transferring to another school. You know, I have to get this to my mom. And I was excited, but it was hard getting
there. Okay, wait. So you went to Crenshaw. You went to Dorsey for how long though? For 2 weeks?
3 days. Three days. It was.
And for people who don't understand, okay, so Westchester is, there's the 405. Westchester is west of the 405 near the airport, right?
Right.
You go east of the 405 around the 10, and there's Culver City, and that's for Culver City High School. Now, Crenshaw is in the Crenshaw district, but that's not. No, it's right next to it, isn't it? Isn't Crenshaw right next to Culver City?
No, it's on a, you know what? It's not as far as you think, but you got to take Slauson. You got to take Sepulveda, make a left on Slauson, and go all the way down, okay? Go all the way down Slauson until you hit Crenshaw, okay? Then once you hit Crenshaw, now you're right there in South Central. You're in the heart of the Crenshaw district. And right there on Crenshaw and 54th, there you got Crenshaw High School, a street over from Crenshaw.
Okay, so I don't like to do this to go backwards in time, but I remember my freshman year. So you were at Westchester at the time. You're not in the heart of South Central. And as we point out, you're in Ladera. Again, nice area, up kind of a hilly area, overlooking some of the other stuff. The white Orange County kids perspective, and I had my whole life, we had gone, there's a Challengers Boys Club. We used to hoop there on Saturday mornings. We would have games there like in sixth and seventh and eighth grade or whatever. So, right. And we had friends and we knew about gangs and all that stuff in the city, but you know, I grew up in Orange, California. It's fine. What do you remember? What were the riots like, the Rodney King? Because it has kind of come full circle with all of this unrest now. Like my memory, like I had no idea that, and I know he was on a bunch of stuff, but I had no idea that cops treated people like this, like zero. You know, right. Like I didn't, obviously you run up on cops that are on a power trip, whether you're white, black, Mexican or whatever. Mm-hmm. But and I've always felt like LA, it's kind of homogenous, right? Like everybody's from somewhere else, right? And I have kind of a blind spot to it because just how being raised in a hoop, like if you're a racist, it's not the place for you, right? But I remember like when the riots went down, like, the shit got real. It was very, very different. And there was a lot of tensions within the city. What was it like for you? What's your memories and your experiences going back to the LA riots?
You know, that is a fixture in my life where you never will forget that. I mean, up to that very second when they canceled school and my mom is calling me to make sure I come from school right to her house. You know, this is where everything starts kind of, you know, trickle off, and I'm in the car. My friend, he said, "Man, they're looting. Let's go." I'm like, "No, dude. Mom's telling me get to."
We had people in my high school who were like, and Tustin High School was the most diverse high school in Orange County. Again, right? And we had dudes. I never forget. I won't sell them out. We had dudes on my team like, "Yeah, we're going to LA to get some stuff." Like, right, dude, that's a bad idea. I am not going. Plus, I'm a white dude. I just saw that guy get pulled out of his truck. Like, no, thank you. Yeah. Oh, man, it ain't that bad. Come on. Anyway, so your mom made you come home and you just wrote it out on TV.
You know what? I didn't make it home that easy. You know, with stops, people picking up people. Oh, well, let's go over here. Let's see this and see that. And tell you the truth, I did ride around for about an hour. But, you know, I made it back in safe because right about then, things were getting a little bit out of hand.
Yes.
And you don't want to be in the middle of things when they're out of hand. I don't care what you are. You just don't want to be right in the center of all that drama. And it was special for me just to see, looking at it from my eyes, I could see the first time I saw a black man getting beat up by the police was filmed on camera, Rodney King, you know. And just to see that, you know, this many years later, at least the recording can be able to convict, you know, a police for his doing that special. We still have a long way to go, but just seeing that standpoint of seeing that one camera can get these guys off, but this camera can get him convicted.
I still don't. They all got off. Like that right. They all. We can do another pod. It made no sense to anybody. They all got off.
Oh,
like, they
right.
kicked the shit out of this guy.
Right. Like, no probation. They're like, come on, anything. So it was like a sad face.
It was. And it probably is what led to OJ getting, off because people were like, that shit didn't make any sense. Yeah. Okay. So you show up at Crenshaw and like now Coach West is your coach, right? So
yes.
So you what's your memories of showing up at Crenshaw's gym?
I walk into Crenshaw, excuse me, and I look to the left, you know, you got the bleachers and you got about, honestly, you got probably 150 kids. And I'm looking, I'm saying, oh wow, the PE classes are still in here. And I'm like, wow, this is crazy. And my man says, no. They're trying out. Everybody you see up there is trying out for Crenshaw basketball. And I'm like, are you serious? Wow. Everybody wants to play for Crenshaw basketball. And, you know, just to see that was amazing because that got me more hyped. I said, oh, y'all trying out? I'm trying out too. Okay, so let's go. And, you know, know it or not, the competition, that already started when you walked in the gym and saw everybody. You know, it's going to be a competitive couple of days right now where everybody wanting to play at a Crenshaw jersey, y'all. And when I saw that, I never saw that again. You'll never see that again. I don't even think let them play after Crenshaw. But you have everybody left. Alexis Scruff was gone. You had a lot of players that had were seniors. So it was all about rebuilding Crenshaw back. And if it took him watching players all day, all night, find a good new kid to put up the floor, it was well worth it, as you see. You know, I saw Chris out there, and I'm like, oh, okay, Marcus, okay. And he's doing all these moves and just making it look so easy. And he had a little bit of weight on him. You know, not fat, but just thick, you know, and as he always.
No, he was fat. It's okay. KJ's cool. I mean, like, look, he was fat. He was unbelievable how skilled he was and how good he was. And at that time, he just hadn't taken care of his body yet. Right? Yeah. And he was fat. It was all right. Like he was.
He's going to let's say a little chunky. Okay. A little chunky.
But well, look,
he was, yeah, he had more.
Now, here's what you don't know. So KJ, who I love, and he was a great player. But he's like me, right? Like we're talkers and bullshitters, whatever. So the summer before that year, the circuit used to be you play in a tournament in Long Beach, right? Izzy had a tournament in Long Beach. Then you go play in Vegas at the Nike National Championship. And then you go play in Phoenix. And it was back-to-back-to-back weeks. And, you played in a camp first, right?
Right,
if you were good enough, you played the ABCD, which we went to the next year. That year was at UC Irvine, was good enough. There's also Superstar Camp. And then there was West Coast, the Pump Camp, right? Which was, mm-hmm. So you did camp, and then like a day of practice, and then Long Beach, and then Vegas, and then Phoenix.
Right.
And by the time you get to Phoenix, you're tired.
You're kind of done.
You're kind of done, right? It's kind of like, we're done. It's hot. And some of those gyms back then didn't have AC, or the AC wasn't working all that well, right? And these guys you started playing with in the spring, and you played like 100 games with them. And, you know, it's like your brother, like you get kind of tired of each other. We got into a fight in the back of a 15-passenger van, me and KJ, on the way to Phoenix.
Really?
My dad, what's going on back there? I got pulled out of the road. And my dad was about to beat both of our asses. We got in a fight. Like, here's a grown man. And, like, Marcus was cool. And KJ eventually left. And I think you guys played in the same travel team that next year. Right. But it was Marcus was cool. He was like, hey, treat him like he's your son. Like, you want discipline. And anyway, we got into a fight, whatever.
Don't feel bad. We did too, okay?
No, I know. But it's like one of those you're around each other enough where you piss each other off and then you come, and he's much bigger than me.
Oh, yeah.
He
knows how to pressure.
Bro, yes, he definitely knows how to pressure. But he was heavy. He was. And it probably, you know, changed his, it changed his life when he changed his diet at UCLA. They didn't cover LA teams in Orange County. Like, I don't ever remember. Like, first time I saw Crenshaw play was at the Sports Arena against Modern Day, and they wanted no part of you guys. And that was a loaded team. That team, they beat my. I went to a public school. I didn't want to go to there because I wanted to. It's kind of the same thing as you in Culver City. Like, I wanted to play.
Right.
And
right.
Modern Day, like, they had too many dudes. I wouldn't have been able to play until like my senior year.
Got some time with Sufi.
Sufi was my teammate. He was older than me, but they had Sufi. Then they had my age. They had Clay McKnight, who was not a point guard, but like, look, the coach's son's going to play.
Clay.
They had Kevin Augustine was younger than me, but he was a hooper. Like they had Miles. They had, those are all my guys that I played with.
Right.
So I don't remember, were you guys dominant that year? Were you just okay? Like, what was your actual season like?
We weren't picked to win that game. You know, Modern Day was loaded. We kind of came out the blue. We almost lost to Capistrano Valley that year. You know, they had a guy that could not miss from the corner. Okay, and once again, Chris saved us that game too. You know, when Miles missed the free throw with 3 seconds left, Rico got the basketball. That's in the book too. He takes a dribble, passes it off to Chris. They didn't play Rico too tough. They thought he might.
Wait. So Ryan, what was the score? Was Modern Day, was it tied at Miles with the free throw?
It was Modern Day was up one. Okay. Modern Day was up one. Miles could have sealed it, or at least made it where we would have went into overtime if he would have made the second free throw. He misses it, hits the back of the iron. Rico gets the backboard, gets the rebound, shoots it to Chris. Chris gets the ball. It's 2 seconds left. He actually won. I don't know how they did it so quick. Rico took one dribble past it. Chris took the ball. He does a little put shot like this. 2 seconds, and now you see the ball goes right in. He takes. The only thing he takes a dribble. I think he gets the ball. And, you know, he might have took a dribble and just shoots a little shot put. And it goes in. I fouled out. I think I fouled Mark Williams.
My man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I fouled him, and he got fouled. I got hit my ball, so I'm crying and hurt at the same time because I fouled out. I'm like, oh, I'm hurt, but I fouled out. So, you know, I was out of there, and I'm cheering from the bench. I'm like, oh, when he gets shot, I'm running. I forgot I was hurt. I'm running to Chris, and we all running on the court to this day. I cannot find that game, and that was one game that I would love to have for my documentary. Now, I've got all the, you know, the Modern Day with Shea. You know, I've got the Jesuit game with Mike Fontaine. But that game right there is a classic game. If anybody's listening from
that's not a problem. I'm sure Modern Day has it. They tried to burn it.
Right, so, there you go.
Okay, so let's fast forward. So yes. We go to ABCD camp, mm-hmm, in Ypsilanti, Michigan.
Yeah.
Okay. So here's the squad I remember. Let's see if I get it right here. Okay. So Jelani Gardner, he was a bad boy, right? Jelani was, he was 6'5" point guard. My dad's like, that's the next Magic Johnson.
Yeah.
We had Jelani Gardner. We had Tony Gonzalez.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
We had you, we had me, we had Alex Lopez, who I played with in sixth grade. Right.
Alex Lopez.
Right. The Brooke and Robbins brother.
Yeah.
Okay. Man, we had a dude from Trayvon Carmichael from Fontana.
That name sounded from, I saw. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he was like, I don't know. He was like 6'5", 6'4", could dunk pretty good. I mean, he was like Inland Empire. Like at that time, it didn't really exist on our radar. Right.
Right.
Didn't really know who he was. We had Slick Rick, Ricky Price. Okay. Who was Rick was always on a rival team. Like literally I'd never played all these guys I'd never played with before. And Miles and those guys, they went to Nike camps. So we go to ABCD. Okay. I'll give you my memory in a second. This is about you. What is your memory of how you blew up at that camp?
You know, I coming off that city and state championship and able to go there. My thing was personally, I know we had a squad. My thing was trying to improve myself on the wing. You know, I wanted to be a small forward. I wanted to be able to play outside, you know, away from the basket. And that camp is what gave me the opportunity. And your dad did, you know, and we bumped heads a lot, but your dad actually gave me that chance.
Bumped head once.
Your
memory's bad. You bumped head once. Here's what happened. This story I know because I lived it and I was there and I don't forget shit.
Tell me beta for beta.
It was like the second game we're playing. And we were like, at that time, Jelani was like, we should all play AAU together this summer. We go kick everybody's ass. Like, we just stay together, right? And we were super tight and it was just fun. And we were kicking somebody's ass. And the way it worked was there were 4 10-minute quarters, right? And running time. And I think we had 10 dudes on the squad, right? And you'd play. So there was no, and if you had less, it was like a number system. So everybody played like the same amount.
Right.
Five guys. And then there was a 10-minute coaches quarter. And that was like, all right, now you're trying to win. And the coaches could sub freely. And we beat somebody by like 20 points. And after the game, everybody's high-fiving. And you're pissed. pissed.
Really?
And I was like, yeah. And I was like, yo, man, what's the matter? He's like, yo, man, your pops didn't play me. It's like, what are you talking about? Like, he didn't play me. And I went up to my dad. I was like, hey, man, I don't think you played Tremaine. He's like, what are you talking about? He just forgot. So you're hot. So the way it worked was, we would, in the morning, there'd be like a clinician or whatever. We do some stuff, a little practice. In the afternoon, we play. And then we have dinner. And then we play again. So it's probably like the second day of being there.
Yeah. Right?
So we go to dinner, and you're not talking to anybody. You're fucking hot. Hot,
Are
hot,
you serious?
Hot. And you definitely don't want to talk to me. And of all the people above me, you don't even want to look at my dad, right? You are so pissed. And so you were already a freak show in layup lines. Like, I had no idea. I just had no idea. I'd seen you play once in my life before that at Crenshaw against Monterey.
Nobody knew who I was. Yeah.
You know, nobody knew who you were.
Yeah.
And like, Ricky was blowing up. Ricky was like the best player in camp.
Yes. Right?
And so you were like, hey, man, I ain't fucking passing. I was like, all right. Like, I don't know what to do with that. Like, all I do is pass. Like, whatever. You know,
you did not
pass the entire game. You also, I think, missed one shot the entire game. It was like, you were so focused. I am so mad at that white dude coaching. I'm so mad at everybody else. Nobody knows who I am. I'm going to kill everybody. It's like that scene of Marcus in White Man Can't Jump. I'll go back to my car, get my other gun, shoot everybody's ass.
Nobody
said. Right, I don't know. Yeah, that was you. And from that moment on, everybody knew who you were. That's my memory of it. From that moment on, my dad was like, oh, shit, he can play. He can shoot. He can play the wing. He was like, go do you, man. Just go do you. It was one of those, like, I'm going to show you, and you did.
You know what? Goodness gracious. That was the game of my life.
Dude, now you got to rewrite your book.
Right. That right there. I remember that I got hot and partaking that I didn't pass the ball or not. But the point was, I was focused.
That's the film you need. That's the tape you need to find.
Yeah, that would be a, that was,
I probably have that one.
Yeah, that would be a classic. Sunny. We need to call Sunny.
Sunny definitely has it.
That was great.
Okay, so my recollection of Cal is we knew some shit was going on. And here's how. Because Jelani was a talker, right? And if you remember, so I roomed. Who'd you room with at that camp? I roomed with J.R. Henderson.
Who was that? Who did I room with?
Probably with Alex or Tremaine or someone. Well,
I can't remember who I remember a lot of Detroit players meeting on with
we lost to Detroit, Detroit in the finals, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think they were next. They were like next to us, which made it worse.
Right. Yeah. Right?
But,
yeah.
So what I remember was next to, so we had a room, and it was like no air conditioning in that shit either. It was terrible.
It wasn't hot.
Hot. And I had JR with me who lives in Bakersfield. It's hot as shit. And he was miserable. And he would take cold, wet towels and put them all over his body and just lay in his bed. And I was like, okay. And so Jelani and Ricky were next door to us, and they roomed together, and they had hated each other beforehand, but they somehow kind of became boys.
Right.
And and Antoine Walker was always coming over playing cards or shooting dice. And they started talking about, we ain't going nowhere for less than $100,000. We ain't going nowhere. And I was like, and they kept talking about Cal. So why did you, true story, why did you choose Cal?
You know, I took off, that was a good point. If I look back at it again, you know, Bowles wasn't actually my favorite, you know, home visit at that time. My favorite home visits were Roy Williams. I was impressed with Roy and Jim Boeheim. I'm still impressed with Jimmy because he didn't walk in with anything. He just had this. He said, hey, I got a tape for you to watch on the school program. And then after this, I'm just going to, you know, give you my spiel. Bowles, I like the influence that he had not only on me, but my mom and my dad. He made them feel real comfortable. And let me tell you something, it's the difference between a recruiter, you know, coach. Bowles was more of a good recruiter. You know, he could get you on campus, okay? Once you're on campus and you know, some things might not work how you want them to. But for him to get you, you know, have, you know, that influence on my parents, that kind of meant something for me. And not saying anything bad, Bowles, he wasn't a bad coach. He probably wasn't the best coach for me at that time. But I loved an assistant coach. You had Charles Payne, you had Billy Kennedy, you know, and, you know, he was at Texas A&M for years. You know, Coach Payne was at for a number of years, assistant coach. Then you had Robert, you know, you had a, you know,
Kirk Townsend, right?
Yeah, he's, you know, he's been at Kansas forever. So those guys really just closed the deal, you know, with me going there. I mean, I and then you had Scott Perry. You know, Scott Perry, you know, has been, you know, in the NBA since then, you know, GMs. He was actually my GM assistant with Joe Dumars in Detroit. So, you know, you had that nucleus up there that, you know, made you feel good. You know, not only are you, you know, having it cool with the head coach, but you have a relationship with assistant coaches. So once I was on campus, it was, you know, me, Jelani and I talked, you know, and, you know, Jelani saying he's going to throw me lobs. You know, it's like, it's us, bro, it's us. And, you know, that's what you want. You know, you want another, you know, recruit there saying, hey, we're going to change this. And then when you had Tony, that didn't hurt. You acknowledge two star sports. It was like, hey, I'm coming here, but I'm a – so when you look at that, I didn't feel like I was just coming in by myself. I had.
Were you getting paid?
No, I didn't get paid, which, you know, a lot of people thought I got paid. Now, you know, of course, you know, Summer Bridge was free for me. You know, you get countless meals and, you know, shoes. But if you're talking about the Jelani, you know, with the meeting with, you know, Pops and all, you know, money being exchanged, you know, that wasn't me, you know. Fresno, I got some money, you know, yeah. But I didn't, you know, any money to go to Cal, you know.
So you show up, like, you've been in L.A. your whole life, and now you're at Berserkly, right? My brother was up there six years as assistant, right? Different place. What was that like for you?
Berkeley was nice. Oh, you just feel so connected to the city, you know, the town. It's a free, open vibe, you know. People actually keep their head up and talk to you. You know, a lot of people these days walk past you and they keep their head down. Berkeley, they want to see, you know, invite you, say hi. You know, you might have a conversation with somebody in line, you guys waiting to buy something. You know, it's more of an open, you know, warm-hearted spirit, a little crazy. It's a, you know, you don't know, you might have a guy walking back into class with his backpack. That was a big thing back then. Free speech. You know, Cal has free speech. That is the mecca of free speech. And it was just great to feel that experience. It was just fortunate that basketball played a way bigger part than, you know, close to with me, you know, leaving Cal.
No question. Okay, so you decide, did you leave before everything blew up? Or did you leave because it was all blowing up with the NCAA stuff?
I left right after Bowles. You know, I was gone before, because if I knew Bowles probably would have got fired. I mean, nothing against Bowles. I probably would have stayed. You know, I've already made my commitment to Tark, and you know, and I asked.
Well, how'd that happen? How did Tark? How'd you get to? Because now you go in the portal and somebody calls you. How did it happen that you?
Well, you know what? It's, you know, timing is everything. By this time, James Gray had signed with Fresno. He has spent his 2 years at Santa Monica, JC, with Marvin Lindsay. And I said, hey, that's my, you know, Gumby's my guy. You know, I said, hey, this might be a situation for us to put Fresno back on the map, having L.A. put kids here. And I talked to Tark, you know, they feel good. You know, they have good players. I and I said, you know what, this actually worked. I spoke with Danny Parkani, and John Welch was coaching.
Welch was awesome. Great workout guy. I mean, unbelievable. Great, like, workout
guy. I must have worked out. Yeah, you already know. Good. So it was a good foundation. You know, I think I worked out with Welch maybe the first or second day I was there. He said, hey, you want to work out? And I'm like, well, why not? You know, and trust me, I went out that workout.
So who's on your squad at Fresno?
Well, you had a super squad there, man. You know, you had Terrence Roberson, four-time All.
T-Rowe. He was on that Michigan squad that we played against.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. You had Chris Herron. You had a Vondre Jones. You know Vondre Jones, Southern Cali kid.
I know Vonnie, right? He was at Artesia with the O'Bannon boys, right?
Right.
Okay, so I got a bunch of questions out, right?
Ray for Austin,
Skip. Like you had dudes from everywhere. Okay, so let's start with Chris Herron.
Yeah.
Okay, so he was a bad boy, right? BABC, got in trouble, coke at BC. He's at Fresno. He's hooping. Did you know he was still on something and he was partying all that stuff?
You know what? He did a good job of keeping his business way. Sometimes his business would come to, you know, it would come to him and we would see. But Chris always kept a professional. You didn't know how high he was. You know, he'd come right into practice and start hooping, you know, intense. So the intensity was there and that helped raise our level of intensity too. So however means it came by, Chris said it, okay? And that helped us, right? Now, his habit, you know, you could see some little here and there moments, but we also had it at his back too, as far as, hey, we're not going to put this out here when he gets suspended. We will say he has the substance abuse problems where people laid it off on alcohol. You know, we laid it off on alcohol for him. So people, but he wouldn't do it close. So, you know, that was something the team had his back. And that's what the team was there for. You know, team for a certain amount of time and come back and help us, you know, if our nucleus stayed together, you know, we had Winter Walton too, you know, Mr. Basketball, Detroit, you know, so, right, just thinking like, oh my goodness.
How did it work with getting paid? Like, did they, because I heard stories about that, the when the guys were at Vegas, right, the way it was, you knew, you had one guy you go to on a Friday, you go into their office, and they get you an envelope and you go. There's the old stories of in Vegas, guys would be a parking valet, right? You have a job at the parking valet and you would get like crazy. You work for a couple hours, you get crazy tips from just the right guy. Like it's obviously 20 years later. How'd it work?
You know, it would be alumni, you know, that would, you know, help us out. You know, they have their, you know, their vegetable crops, you know, Fresno. You know, it's all nothing but land. So you got your wine crops, you got everything. So majority of alumni from Fresno, you know, they had a lot of land. And we'll go out there, you know, for them to be able to come see us and sit down at their property at the table and be able to break bread with us. So they're feeling special. So we're feeling special too. So it was a mutual thing. He said, hey, Trey, do you need anything? Say, you know what? So I moved down there with my girlfriend. So she had graduated from Cal, and so she was trying to fill out her ways, too. And I said, you know, we're just trying to get things right. And he said, hey, Trey, come here once a month. You know, if you need me, we'll be good. You know, here's a couple thousand. Hey, I'll take that. And it's nothing like you'd be getting a $20,000 or $10,000, $50,000 bags, but it was because the couple thousand were consistent. And that's what you need as a kid to survive. You know, you need a couple thousand here and there. You don't need much. You just need to make sure you're comfortable and you can go about your way. Now, you know, me getting cars and stuff from Cal came from outside sources, you know, and
you say you didn't get anything from Cal.
No, I'm talking about when I got a car at Cal, I got that from outside sources. I was James Casey. You know, when I got in trouble from taking stuff from James Casey, not actually at Cal. So when you say getting Cal, nobody actually at Cal actually paid me.
Right. Did they set up the deal with James Casey? Did they say, hey, go see James Casey?
Well, see, Casey and Bowles didn't get along. So, you know, the relationship with Cal and Casey really never existed. You know, my thing with Casey existed with guys who were financially able in the hood to support me. And of course, they wanted their money back once I made it, you know.
Right. That's the part that I don't know if people, if kids understand well enough, right? It's like when you take money from people, yes, there are people like Fresno State boosters that they just want you to be. But when you take money from a dude in the city, okay, you take money from a dude who wants to be an agent, they want something back in return.
Right.
When did you find that out?
Once I got to the NBA, You know, everything, all the doors, you know, your doors knock once you make it to the NBA. You know, you have old agents and, you know, you have to apply by the contracts too. You know, you make the NBA, this amount is owed. If you don't make it to the NBA, then only this amount has to be repaid. So I wanted to make it. So this had to be repaid. So you know, I honored all my obligations, you know, with everybody, and it worked out.
Were you there during the Vonnie Jones, Kenny Bruner samurai sword? Kenny Bruner was a bad motherfucker as a player.
Yeah.
Right? We played Dominguez. My junior year, they beat us. My senior year, they beat us. He is, without any question, the quickest, toughest guard I have ever played against. You couldn't really shoot, but it didn't matter because you couldn't keep him in front.
Okay? Right.
Remember Tank, who went to Providence? And he came back to Long Beach State. I'll think of a next one. I couldn't do anything with Kenny. Kenny was a bad mother, right? So yeah. He goes to Georgetown and transfers back. All right, give me the night and how it all went down.
Okay, real quick, you know, my girl and I are staying at the house, and Kenny's coming out and say, hey, Kenny's gonna stay up with us for 2 days. 2 days. And she says, okay, I'll cook for you guys, this and that. I say, no, we'll just order a pizza. So we order a pizza. Kenny comes over. I'm like, this be good for you, but why'd you leave Georgetown? Okay, why'd you leave? You were perfect there. So I say, okay, you'll come here to stay out of trouble. We can make this happen. I said, just stay here with me these 2 days. That's it. I wake up in the morning, Kenny's gone.
He's on his visit? This is his visit?
No, he's gone. I can't find him. He's over at Vondre's house. He went to Vondre's house. Okay, so I'm calling Kenny. I said, hey, what's going on? He said, man, I'm gonna come over here and mess with my other partner. I said, okay, cool. I let that go the whole day. The next day, I'm looking out, wake up and watch the news. I see him and Vondre coming out of the jail, getting belted out of the jail. I'm like, what happened within those 24 hours that would allow you guys to be arrested and getting bailed out of jail and on the news? So not only they on channel 2, they're on 2, 5, 9, 11, 13. You know, in Fresno, that's all it is. You know, it's us, Fresno State. So when you get in trouble, you get super exposed. And when you get do something good, you get super propped. So it was a catch 22. It's a double-edged sword. So right there, I found out that they wouldn't let a kid leave out of there that had went to.
Well, they were playing. Were they playing video games? They were smoking. Like what the hell happened?
I would say everything. I think something went bad. They got mad. You know, they were playing with him. So, two different type of situation.
Did you know that Vonnie had samurai swords?
Vonnie has samurai swords. You know, Vonnie is he keeps little trick looks like that around the house. And whatever Vonnie did, you're going to be intimidated, of course, to a kid when you're 7 feet with a samurai sword, you know.
What was Tark like?
Tark was great, man. You know, I wish I really could have got the younger Tark, not knowing that he was kind of on his last leg and he let, you know, the coaches, you know, Danny. And Danny's a great guy, but at that time, he really didn't know how to coach, and he was still learning. And you know, he was still trying to learn the game of basketball. And you had Welch, who, you know, was a workout guy, but still trying to get his coaching, you know, style together. And you had Johnny Brown. And Johnny Brown's a good coach, more on the quiet side. You know, so they had to gel all those things in to try to make it happen because, you know, all those personalities is tough. Everybody I named is a fire starter. Rafer, Chris, everybody. So for them, they get a lot of credit for holding us to the elite, you know, where we were able to, you know, have some success. You know, we didn't have the same starting lineup, you know, but number five times the whole year with all suspensions. But for us to be playing ball at the end of the year, going to the NIT Final Four, at least to be playing while, you know, the NCAAs was playing, was a blessing. But, you know, for me to say, hey, I played with Tark, that's always going to be special for me, knowing what he did at UNLV.
Yeah, it is interesting, though, that, like, you're aware enough now to know that, like, you went to Bose, you were recruited, right? Mm-hmm. And you went to two places because of more relationships than who's the best coach for me, right? Whereas if you could do a do-over, I can't do a do-over. Like, I would have gone to Notre Dame as a do-over, right? If you do a do-over, right. You would have gone to somebody who was like, all right, what is the best for me as a player?
Right.
What is the best for me as a player? And right. Obviously, years later, let's do this. Okay, so you get done playing. Mm-hmm. And you're at a place where T-Robe, you got Skip. You got all these dudes. Everybody thinks they're going to the league. Everybody thinks they're going to be a first-round draft pick. What happened? You get done playing. What do you remember about the next step?
You know, trying to get outside that tweener stage, you know, three,
but four. Now it's crazy now.
It's right. It's a thing now. Yeah. It's a
you plus. Could, like, listen, this is not because you're on my pod. It has nothing to do with it. Right. If you were graduating college right now, you were a senior in college at 6'6", okay, to what, 15?
Okay. Right. Yeah, that's playing weight for me.
Okay.
Yes, exactly.
6'6", 215. Yeah. You could guard 1, 2, 3, 4.
3, 4. Right.
Okay. You got football background. Everybody like that. And all you got to do is be able to make an open shot every now and again. You played for 15 years.
Yeah, right. You're the man if you could do that, right?
Right. But then everybody had to go like down a position, right? Like, oh, you gotta show you're a 2-3, right?
Right.
Like
right.
So okay, you get done. Did you go to Phoenix? Did you go to Chicago? Did you have the private workouts? What'd you do?
I went to Chicago camp. I actually, Dane Settles, who actually worked me out, who is a Pepperdine legend, had his number, retired at Pepperdine. He actually worked me out really good to make me a three-man, you know, small forward. I ended up going to Chicago camp. I really did good. Your boy Ricky Davis, like, man, you really got that small forward spot down. They talking good about you. So, you know, I thought that I would really be able to get in that first round. And I even got a call from Marcus Johnson. Marcus said, hey, man, they like you in Seattle too. Man, I worked out for Seattle. I worked out for various teams. Thinking, Doug, that might be maybe a 29th to maybe a 40th pick. You know, I worked out with Eddie Jordan, and he said, we'll take you with the 32nd pick at Sacramento. You know, let him know they fired him on draft day. So I said, okay, that's out the door. You know, I fall all the way to 54th, was a disappointing. I never worked out for Denver. But, you know, they drafted, excuse me, Ryan Bowen and I, which was great, you know. And, you know, for me to say, hey, and then, of course, the last pick of that draft was J.R. Henderson at the 58th pick. So I thought we all should have been a little higher. But I took that in, you know, met Dan Issel, and it was just a screwed up year, Doug. It was a lockout year. You know, nothing was working for me at that time with the lockout year. A lot of politics involved with players on the team and who will stay and whatnot. And I should have did what Ryan Bowen did. He left and went to London and got money first and came back. So props to him, though. But you know,
you went to Yakima, right?
I went to Yakima with Paul Wolper, who was coaching down there. And that was a tough situation. I really didn't get along with Adam Carter. You know, he was a good, great guard, though. But me coming and trying to play catch up with guys that had already been there for, you know, a certain amount of games, you know, it's like, okay, Trey, you're going to have to take a back seat and come in as you come, you know, as you.
But in many ways, and this may, and I don't know if you agree because you actually lived it and experienced it, but as much as I would tell you that the Fresno situation is fucked up because you weren't like when I was at Notre Dame, when I was at Oklahoma State, like we all wanted to go to the league, but we were all about us. Like we were tight. It was all about us. Fresno. Yeah, y'all wanted to win and all that, but it was still everybody in that room was kind of, it was almost like CBA basketball where this is just a pit stop on the way to the league, right? The reason I tell people all the time is like, you don't want to do the, and you did the IBL, which I did as well, that you don't want to do, which you don't want to do minor league basketball is no one in minor league basketball wants to be on that team. Nobody, the coach, the general manager, Nobody. That's the last place. And whatever you can do to get off that team onto a better team is your goal. Yeah. And it's kind of toxic, but it also like, you know, you go into kind of survival mode. So I do think that on some level, Fresno did kind of prepare you for it, but it's different. Okay. So you sign with Denver. You don't play for Denver. You go to Yakima. That's not great. Right. How'd you get to the IBL?
I got to the IBL word from Oscar Robertson got back, you know, got to me. And, you know, I went on an NBA Legends tour with a lot of ex-NBA.
Oh, you hadn't played in the league yet. You go on a Legends tour. That's amazing.
And man, you know what? It was some type of where they, you know, somebody saw me. You know, Oscar Robertson. No, you know, I'm sorry. Oscar Robertson was he was sort of the president of the IBL Cincinnati stuff. So that came, I believe, you know what? That was, because Joby Wright that saw me. Joby Wright was the coach of the Harlem Globetrotters when I first came back from tearing my Achilles, and he ended up being a coach.
Wait, you skipped a step. When did you tear your Achilles?
I tore my Achilles. Oh, man, that was bad. You know, first of all, we're going to have to do this so I can really give you the whole rundown. I've tore both Achilles. I've tore my right Achilles before I got in the NBA, and I tore my left one when Dennis Johnson was coaching me at the Florida Flame, and he was, and rest in peace, DJ, he regretted playing me that night. He said I was going to get a call up that next day. I said, don't take it personal, DJ. You know, that's how it is, and that's how it's got to be. But look, I tore both of them before I retired.
Okay, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to do all of that part of the journey. We got to do the Malice at the Palace.
Yeah.
We got to do now.
Yeah.
Okay? But you got to leave me with one. I need one quick. Your first NBA game was with the Clippers, correct?
Yes. Yes.
Was it at home or on the road?
It was on the road against Reggie Miller. My first foul, I fouled Reggie, got an and one. I'm saying, oh, boy, my first foul is against Reggie, and I fouled him. And I ended up playing with Reggie Cannon, but that's a later story, too.
Okay, but here's the story. Here's the question I want to know. Okay, you grew up in Los Angeles.
Yes.
Okay, your greatest high school moment. I know you won the state title, but you beat Mater Dei twice in the sports arena. What was it like to make it? You had torn your Achilles tendon, mm-hmm. right? And to make it to the NBA for the Clippers.
Right.
What was that feeling like?
Dream come true. Dream come true is a blessing. Real quick before we go, when my agent called me and said, hey, you want to go come to LA and play? I said, yeah. He said, yeah. So he said, pack your bags. I said, we're playing for the Lakers? And he said, no. Right. I said, okay,
cool, whatever.
It doesn't make a difference. I said, I'll be there too. So,
but do you know, remember that the first night of suiting up in the NBA? Like you have, like, I remember high school when I got my first day of varsity, my freshman year, stared at my uniform, put it on, walked around. I remember college when I first put on my uniform, and all I wanted was one night in an NBA jersey. What's that feeling like?
That's the first thing you look at in the locker room. You just look around. You're looking like, okay, where's my jersey? Oh, there it goes. All right, cool. So it's like, okay, now you get that. It's like a good feeling. You know, you get your nervous vibes, get a good feeling that you compete with the best.
What number were you with the Clippers?
I was 32 with the Clippers. I was 32.
Did you get to pick your number?
Yeah, I couldn't get 24 until the next year. You know, that was always my number. But when you are the man that's coming late and you are the end of the bench, you'll take whatever number you get, you know. But I believe Doug Overton was 24. I think Andre Miller was 24 the next year. So I couldn't wear 24 until I got to Detroit.
Man, first bucket was where? Was
first
it
bucket,
Indy?
At Indiana. I had 7.6 rebounds. So that was a blessing to at least get on the board as your first, you know, bringing in your first game. So
all
it was.
All right. That's just part one. I appreciate your time.
Yeah.
We will do part two and we'll do all the other, and we'll do the good shit. I appreciate you. We'll talk to you soon. Okay.
All right. Thanks, Doug.
See you, T. See you,
baby. Peace.
All right. That's part one of my talk with T folks, Jermaine folks. What an interesting dude, right? Like, got hit once in a big game in the leg in football. I was like, nah, I'm a hoop. And then chased it to a bunch of different high schools, ended up at Crenshaw. And then at Cal. What a roster, right? Oh, my God, what roster they had. I mean, he played with Sharif Abdul-Rahim for a year with Jelani Gardner, with Tony Gonzalez. Man, amazing. And then, of course, all those knuckleheads at Fresno State. But wait till you hear part two. It will drop shortly. I'm Doug Gottlieb. Make sure you listen to the Doug Gottlieb Show daily, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific. And this is All Ball.